Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill sits down with the leaders of Step Up's Office of Student Learning, Carol Macedonia and Paul Nelson, two of Florida's leading experts on special education. Carol, Paula, and Doug all believe that the future of public education in Florida looks a lot like growing models available to students with unique abilities. Programs like the Gardner Scholarship, an educational savings account that allows parents to tailor learning experiences for how their child learns. Carol and Paula also talk about their years working in special education in Florida's school district system and dispel some common myths about how the district serves students with unique abilities. This interview took place in person at Step Up's St. Petersburg office on Tuesday, August 6th, 2019. Thank you for listening and enjoy the interview. So welcome to today's podcast. I'm pretty excited to talk with Paula Nelson and Carol Macedonia about ed choice and special ed, or what a lot of our friends called unique abilities. I think our friends Andy and Camille Gardner have done a nice job of making the point that the term unique abilities is sort of an asset-based term, is an empowerment term. And so we may go back and forth so the listeners will know if we say unique abilities where we're coming from. So you guys have amazing backgrounds in special ed / unique abilities. So Paula, why don't we start with you and just a little bit about your history.
Thank you, Doug. Well, I started as a SLD teacher in Pinellas County Schools.
SLD being?
Specific learning disabilities, students with specific learning disabilities. So I worked at the elementary, middle school level, worked into administrative, was principal of a couple high schools, and then spent the last 3.5 years before coming to Step Up as the supervisor for the Fiddlers, the Florida Diagnostic and Learning Resource Center, which is a discretionary project to serve special needs students out of the Department of Education.
Great. Carol?
Thank you. It's really nice to be able to talk about exceptional student education. It's my background in my life. I started many years ago in a special needs center in Arlington, Virginia, working with students that were cognitively impaired, and had probably 4 joyous years with that population. Moved to Pinellas County, continued to work with exceptional students in the area of severely emotionally disturbed, and actually became a principal of a center for severely emotionally disturbed kids in the late 80s. Went on to become a principal and had clusters of exceptional needs kids in my school, and then became the assistant superintendent of exceptional student education in Pinellas County, overseeing an extremely large population of diverse children. And it's important to understand that there's 13 categories of exceptional student education categories that schools deal with, and we addressed all of those.
Well, we have 2 of the state's leading experts, so it's an honor to be with you guys. So I'm old, and I remember, you know, starting school in Pinellas probably around 1960. There really weren't a lot of services for kids, almost at all. I remember kids in my elementary school that clearly had some learning challenges. The teachers did the best they could, but to be honest with you, those kids were basically just warehoused. And you knew by 2nd or 3rd grade that those kids, you know, never had really a prayer in terms of academic growth and development. And so I guess those were the dark days of education for those kids. You know, one size fits all certainly didn't work for those children. But lots of great things have happened since then. So I want to talk a little bit about that. And certainly Ed Choice has certain lots of histories. The civil rights movement, you know, we all know about how important the civil rights movement was to Ed Choice, and the freedom schools out of Mississippi, sort of John Holt and the unschool movement, that was all part of the history of Ed Choice. But certainly, you know, special ed, exceptional education was a huge part of that. Sort of pioneered the whole idea of customization, meeting the needs of every individual child. So Paula, why don't we start with you? In the places that you worked, you know, how did it work? Does every school serve every child, or how do we decide what the best placement is for a kid in exceptional ed?
Well, I can speak to how one large district did it, because that's where I spent most of my time in education, and it evolved. It's changed a lot over time. When I started teaching, you would have some students with specific learning disabilities in that would be their special reading class or language class. As the inclusion movement took off, You saw a lot less of small classroom one-on-one with a certain special needs, but more of an inclusionary model. But a district could not possibly put every provide a program for all 13 categories Carol mentioned at every school. It's fiscally not possible. So a lot of times they were clustered in the district. So if you had a student who was on the autism spectrum, they may not be zoned going to their zone home zone school, but one nearby where those students would be served in a cluster.
And Carol, talk about the exceptional ed centers that you led.
Well, the exceptional ed centers were the students with the most severe needs, and those needs could not be met within a general ed setting. If as Paula said, it would be fiscally undoable, it would also be morally undoable because those kids needed fundamental individualized programs that could only be provided in certain center schools where their needs were exclusively met. So when you think about the categories of exceptional student education, you can have a child who has a hearing disability or may be blind. You have another child that has a traumatic brain injury. You have another child who's cognitively impaired, another child who's on the autism spectrum. It just makes common sense that all of those students cannot be educated in every single school. No school can provide that kind of service and do it well.
Some of the centers also serve students that their life functioning skills are so severe. They're in a wheelchair, they have medical needs that require tubes and diapering and things that not every school, it takes manpower and funds and resources to do that. So no, they cannot put them everywhere.
We're talking about kids that are on vents,
yes.
Kids that are tube fed, kids that need a 24-hour nurse. A general ed school cannot provide that.
Or even perhaps a child with autism, depending on the characteristics, it could be that
Well, the spectrum is so broad that absolutely.
Well, right. We say once you've seen one child with autism, you've seen one child with autism.
Right,
you
told me that.
They are fundamentally, uniquely individualized.
Yeah, so you always hear that, well, you know, district schools have to take every child. That's really not true about an individual school because, like you guys said, fiscally it would make no sense to have to include the resources for the entire spectrum of the 13 different categories. And so that's why school districts have developed cluster schools or centers so that kids can choose to go to a school that has specific requirements and expertise. So you guys have been working with private schools for a couple years. How does this play out in private schools? Obviously, every private school, just like every district school, can't serve every child. I know that there are some schools that in the private sector that exclusively serve those kids, and other schools have different kinds of expertise. So what are you guys seeing in the private school sector?
It's very similar. We have private schools who are very clear about the type of students that they have the resources, the knowledge, the expertise to be able to ensure that they learn successfully. That's their ultimate goal, is the child's success. If a school does not have the manpower, the knowledge, the skills, the resources, the environment, it would be morally wrong for them to take that child. And so they are very clear with the parent when they meet with the parents. These are the opportunities we have for your child. This is what we don't have.
So it would be malpractice, in essence, to take a child in a district school or a private school or a charter school if you don't have the expertise to meet that child's need. It's basically malpractice.
And
to
a parent
that
wants their child to succeed, so they're right. Going to pick a school that has that environment.
What I've seen that's been very positive, too, is because of the Gardner Scholarship, a parent may have funds to help that school purchase, if you will, an aid or specific resources or augmentative services or therapies or whatever, and the parent can pay for that via the scholarship. I think the highlight of my job since I came here has been going out and seeing the schools that serve these special needs students exclusively. I call them my Gardner schools. They are amazing. And I had no idea they existed before. And, you know, they can do things that are not tied to bureaucracies and red tape and things like that. And I think they do a really great job of meeting the needs of the students.
They remind me of the centers that first originated when special ed became a law. In 1974, when IDEA was authorized, and there were centers that met the needs of these kids that had much more significant disabilities.
Right.
And that's what we are finding across our state. We've got some amazing, I'd call them center schools.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the Gardner Scholarship, which is really an educational savings account. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the next new wave of tools that are available to families and educators to be able to customize. The families can use those Gardner Scholarships for a variety of things. A lot of times they help schools purchase unique expertise that they wouldn't normally have, but it also allows the families to extend education beyond schools. So talk a little bit about how you see the Gardner families using that money and how that sort of takes special ed and ed choice to the next level, to the next generation, and what that might look like.
Well, a parent can customize the schooling for their child based on their needs. They may need a combination of some homeschooling, center schooling, therapies. A lot of the schools that serve primarily only exclusively students with unique needs are costly because of the resources. So sometimes that absorbs their entire scholarship, but in many situations the parent can utilize those resources to provide outside therapy outside of the school day, or technology that the child needs, especially augmentative technology that can help them with communication.
I think we're beginning to see students using their Gardner Scholarship hopefully to extend their learning into the summer in maybe various summer programs, summer enrichments, summer extracurriculum, or evening extracurricular, because learning goes far outside of the 6 hours, and especially for kids that have unique needs, they need as much opportunity in a variety of environments to generalize their skills. And so we're beginning to see the Gardner families use that money to provide that extended learning time.
What's been exciting is, as I visited these schools, I heard the same common threads, and one of the ones that just stood out 3 years ago was transition services. A lot of these students need schooling beyond the age of 18, beyond the 12th grade. They need functional life skills and career development, and it's very uniquely different. And so the schools were all struggling with developing a transition program, and everybody was trying to create the same thing and they weren't working together. So what we did is we pulled them together, we created this networking group, and now these schools talk to each other. They call each other, hey, I'm getting ready to put an equestrian program in here. What's the do's and don'ts? What should I do? What do you think about this? They meet quarterly together. We now have social dinners. They really are learning to put that transition service in place and taking each other's ideas and sharing and meeting the needs of those kids, and it's amazing.
But that unique group of schools stand ready to serve some of the students that our other private schools just don't have the capability of doing.
That's right.
Because they are providing general education in a general education environment. And it would be a travesty to have a child experience or lack of experience of learning in that type of environment. So the parents of Gardner Scholarship kids have choice. They can choose a center, they can choose a general private school, they can choose a private school that's known for its cluster of, let's say, students on the spectrum.
You can also purchase services from school districts. So you could, for example, purchase services from a district school that has certain services that you want. You could also then purchase outside services from occupational therapy or physical therapy. So it gives you a whole bunch of options beyond just schooling. So really what's interesting is that these kids with unique abilities and the services we're developing ultimately could be the future of all public education. Imagine a world where every child has that level of customized services. And I'm also thinking about we talk a lot about IEPs, individual education plans, but those are mostly school-based usually. But you could also think about an IEP in the world of the Gardner Scholarship, the Gardner ESA, as we expand that. You can think about IEPs functioning outside of school throughout the summer, et cetera. Then the question becomes what that look like and how do parents manage that? And I mean, it changes the whole world of how we think about education.
I think it changes the whole world for all kids, because the one thing that IDEA gave to us was the idea of fundamental individualism, that every child is unique, regardless if they are unique with challenges or unique with strengths. every child is definitely a unique individual, and that individualized education plan should be for every child.
It's part of why I love that notion of unique abilities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Andy and Camille Gardner have done a great job of helping us understand what Carol just said, that every child has unique characteristics. And I was reading an article the other day where some folks on the autism spectrum are highly valued in the IT world mm-hmm. because they have amazing ability to focus for a long period of time. And as a consequence, they're much better at certain programming activities and things like that. So that's really a good example where they have very unique talents.
We have a school over on the East Coast that serves students that are physically impaired. And when I was visiting once, there was a young lady there who has no ability to use extremities. She uses her eyes to communicate. And she was taking AP classes in her chair. She's in a wheelchair, and she's in that school for her services. But the school has a dual enrollment program and AP services there. And she was taking her courses using her eyes to communicate her work. I mean, amazing.
Yeah,
I think one of the things with exceptional student education is the concept of creativity, that to be successful with these children, you have to be extraordinarily creative. And I see that in our private schools.
Yeah.
They do a lot with very little. They are extraordinarily creative to serve the kids that they do and to get the results that they do.
Yeah, that's sometimes not having resources forces you to think way outside the lines, mm-hmm. and they do that.
Having my feet in both the public and now somewhat the private sector, what I see as a big difference with serving children with autism is the teacher-pupil ratio issue. The public schools have their hands tied sometimes with the amount of services that they can provide, and therefore often serve a wide range of the spectrum in one class and to a lot of kids, even though they're always trying to put enough resources in there. But a private school has the ability to lock it in at a 4-to-1 ratio or 3-to-1 ratio or whatever it is. And I think that's something parents are looking for various children to meet their needs.
Well, it's exciting that all these options are increasingly available. It's a bold new future for public education. Again, when I think back just to my experience as a kid growing up, where I attended segregated schools growing up in Pinellas. My high school wasn't integrated until I was a junior. And like I said before, the kids who had these unique abilities didn't have the opportunity to develop those unique abilities. And it's just extraordinary how far we've come. And I love the fact that we have lots of people coming to the table, whether it's in a traditional neighborhood school, whether it's in a center, whether it's in a charter school or a private school, or now increasingly occupational therapists, physical therapists, all part of public education through the educational savings account. So it's an exciting future.
You know, I have lots of conversations with the principals in the private school, and I've heard recently principals saying, when they have interviewed a child and a parent and they know they just really can't meet that child's needs, that they pick up a phone and call one of their colleagues.
Yes.
And say, hey, I've got this child. I think she'd fit wonderfully in your school. I'm sending her over so that you can meet her. So the private schools are working with each other, not competitively, but collaboratively.
And the same thing is happening with the ones that just serve primarily students with unique abilities. I know of two in Orlando and two in Jacksonville that are constantly in communication. If they can't meet the needs, they refer the parent there. And because the schools can uniquely target the student population that they can best serve, and so the student then can be in a place that is set up to meet their needs and be successful.
And a lot of that is between public and private schools too.
Absolutely.
I know a lot
mm-hmm.
of public school guidance counselors I know will call our schools and say, hey,
yeah.
I'm sending a parent over because I think your school's the best fit. Yep. I know a lot of the private schools will do the same thing, saying,
yep.
I don't have the ability to meet this child's needs, but I know you have a fantastic program over at your public school. I think it's the best fit. So.
And sometimes we just need to really think to that little peanut of a child. There are some categories of exceptional student education that the children like to be together. For instance, the deaf population. They want to be surrounded by other deaf individuals. So placing a child in a school that has no other deaf programs is a travesty for that child. So we have to think about that too.
That's why, the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind, which mm-hmm. has been around a long time, has had an amazing service
yep.
to the state of Florida. And for that very reason,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you said, a deaf child needs to be part of a community. Mm-hmm. And that school particularly has done amazing work over the years. So, well, this has been very enlightening. You guys have done a great job educating me over the years. I want to thank you for that. And so just it's been wonderful with you guys over the years teaching me about these kids and the great work you've done at the schools and the families. So I want to say thank you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us here.
Yeah.